Light's not on.
No, I'm not starting until the blue. Okay, good.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, February 4th, 2015, and I'm opening the organizational meeting for the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. And I'd like to welcome everybody. We're going to have mostly an informational organizational day today. And what I'd like to do really is start, because we have a very new crowd. Those of us on the Senate side are have been on this committee for a long time together. This is our fourth year on sitting over here together since I started in 2012. But on the House side, we have three brand new members. So, Representative Hurd, why don't you start off by telling us who you are, where you're from, and one or two things about your life outside of the Capitol.
So, I'm Dallas Hurd from House District 2. That's formerly Tim Freeman's district. I'm a landscape contractor. District 2 is Roseburg down to Merlin, which is this side of Grants Pass. It's nice, neat, and easy for me to travel because it just pretty much hugs I-5 north and south. I'm a father of one, my little baby Elias. He'll be running through the halls. He's got fiery red hair, so you'll pick him out pretty quick. He's 20 months old. And then my wife, Hannah, they're both here, actually, but I gave them the day off. They got to stay at the house, so lucky them. But, yeah, so landscape contracting is what I do for a living and just love doing that stuff. So now I'm here.
We're excited to have you. Representative Taylor.
Hi, Kathleen Taylor, and I represent Southeast Portland, Milwaukee, and Oak Grove, and took over Representative Carolyn Tomei's former seat. And those are big shoes to fill, even though I'm twice the size of her. And she sends me lots of emails, and you know, so she's keeping tabs on me to make certain I do a good job. And my background, I'm a management auditor. Most recently worked at the Secretary of State's Audits Division. Oh. And then in the past, I've worked in the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and Metro. And I'm a mom. I have two kids in Portland Public Schools. And I have a whole long list of activities I do on a volunteer basis and just very civically engaged, shall we say, but I won't bore everyone.
Glad to have you here.
I'm Representative Betty Comp, and my district is House District 22. That's Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and North Salem. We're just like one block south of where my district border is here in town. I am an educator as a profession. I haven't thought about this for a while, but I used to tell people when I was out door knocking and stuff that I've done everything in school except for, because I've been a custodian, I've been an assistant, I've been a teacher, I've been an administrator, you know, gone through the whole list. But I said the only thing I haven't done in a school is be a school secretary. It is way too hard.
So true.
It is. I have four children, eight grandchildren, four wonderful, beautiful daughters, and three great-grandchildren, and they won't be running in the halls because my only one of them's running around. The other two are about 6 months old.
Yep.
So,
great. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm Nancy Nathanson. I represent District 13, which is primarily North Eugene and part of downtown. I'm very excited to represent some key places for my city, the downtown public library, the train station, and my district also includes Autzen Stadium, home of the Ducks. I have retired from a profession of 37 years working for academic libraries, so that's university and college libraries. In the last 10 or 12 years, I was working for an organization that provided services to public and private university and college libraries in Oregon and Washington, and even some courier service that extended into Idaho. So I've gotten to see an awful lot of our state and Washington because of my work with libraries.
Would you like me to go next, Madam
Co-Chair? Indeed, Mr. Co-Chair.
So my name is Greg Smith. I am the husband of the most amazing woman from Eastern Oregon, my wife, Sherry.
What a suck up.
I know who's allows me to be down here. We have way too many.
To tell her that you said that, or what?
She's probably listening.
That's better than my husband's doing.
Yes, I have way too many children.
No, you don't.
Especially too many who are still living off of me. Let's see here. Been in the legislature a long time, as long as the senator has been. I think you and I started at the same time. Let's see. I do business development for a living. And so quite often you'll hear, I'll declare conflicts of interest. Really the reason for that is many of my clients quite often are involved in economic development. They're in land use issues. They're in finance issues. And so we just like to be careful on that. So I just share that with you. In my private time, I chase a kid around who wrestles. And actually, I'm very excited, Representative, because out of your district is the number two wrestler in the state who gets to face the number one wrestler in the state in about 20 days.
Really?
And that'll be an exciting match.
Yeah.
So other than that, I'm really pleased to work with you folks. My one approach to politics is to always look for common ground. And so I hope this committee will bring that approach as well.
Representative, can I ask a question?
Please.
Mr. Co-Chair, didn't you attend a rather an exciting football game recently?
I did. I did through happenstance, not through any financial skill. We ended up getting a box at Autzen Stadium, and with that we were able to also go chase the Ducks at the Rose Bowl and the national championship. So, yeah, thank you.
So. Lucky man.
Yeah.
Mr. Borden.
John Borden with the Legislative Fiscal Office. I'll be your committee administrator.
We'd love to know a little bit about you.
Yeah, we want to know more about you. Come on.
Very important to us.
That's plenty. Thank you.
Okay. So you'll learn very quickly that Mr. Borden is absolutely integral to our work, as is Ms. Jensen, who I will have introduce herself in just a moment. I will come back to the importance of Mr. Borden and our LFO staff as soon as we're finished with introductions. I'm Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. I consider myself extraordinarily privileged to be co-chairing this with Representative Smith again. This is our second biennium chairing together. And I think this year we're the only bipartisan pair co-chairing a subcommittee. And I think it's a testament to the way he and I both strive for common ground that we were asked to do this again, and I'm very pleased. We work extremely well together, and we've got Mr. Borden again, which makes me very happy. I am in my spare time the mother of three children. I got a package deal when I got married, so I've got one who's 35, and she's off on her own with a lovely Ben, who's my sort of son-in-law, and then I have a 19-year-old who's a sophomore in college all the way on the East Coast, and a 16-year-old who is almost never home anymore since she just got her driver's license and plays volleyball incessantly and does reasonably well in school. And in my spare time, I take photos of my cats and other things. So I'm very pleased to be here. This is the beginning of my fourth year in the legislature. So I filled the last 3 years of my predecessor's term. I represent most of Northwest Portland, Beaverton, unincorporated Washington County, up in the metro area. And I'm a family physician. Did I mention that?
No.
I'm a family doctor, and I'm on faculty at the med school. So occasionally I have to do that whole conflict of interest thing, too. But not so much in this committee as in the Human Services Subcommittee.
So you're saying you have a child that's older than you?
No. But that's very sweet. Thank you, Representative. Speaking of suck-ups, and I will say, not to outdo Representative Smith, but the only reason I can be here is because my husband is a far better homemaker and full-time parent than I am. And he's been home full-time with our children since our now 19-year-old was born and does a remarkably good job of keeping the home fires burning. So that's how I get to do this, which I'm very grateful for.
Cool. I'm Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, which is Northern Tillamook County, Clatsop, Columbia, Multnomah, down into the working waterfront in Sauvies Island, and Washington over the hill into the Bethany area, which is one of the fastest growing areas in Oregon. And I said to some ladies earlier today, I actually represent a nibble of Yamhill by a quirk of history. The Gaston Courthouse or Post Office is actually in Yamhill County. So, just that footprint. Prior to that, prior to coming to the legislature, I ran a state agency for 5 years, the Department of Aviation, and prior to that, I owned, operated, and flew for a commercial helicopter company, so I spent 20 years as a working helicopter pilot.
I'm Doug Whitson. I represent Senate District 28, Klamath, Lake Crook, most of the landmass of Deschutes and Jackson counties. I'm a retired veterinarian. We have residential real estate, have a couple of small farms. Have three daughters, grown daughters. One's a biologist, one is a dental hygienist, and one is an economist. I'm married to Representative Whitsett, and we serve together.
I list him as my primary care physician.
Why not?
I think Bates and I are going to take offense at that one. Okay.
I did have one other thing. I also represent Crook County High School, which has a juggernaut of a wrestling
team. Yeah, I bow down. I bow down, yeah. Notice I didn't mention them.
So we're going to spend a little time going through logistics. Many of you have extraordinary amounts of experience, more than me, on Ways and Means. And in fact, five out of the eight people on this subcommittee also co-chair. I mean, the two of us co-chair this one. Senator Johnson, Representative Kampf, and Representative Nathanson all co-chair other subcommittees. Senator Whitsett's also on full Ways and Means. So the one thing we'll have to bear in mind, I think Representative Taylor, Representative Hurd, you guys aren't on full Ways and Means, right? Okay, so we'll just have to remember Mr. Borden and Co-Chair Smith that as we're going along, they can carry bills on the floor, but not to full. So we'll just have to be careful about that. So I am very happy that we have so many experienced people here because the more people who understand how our budget pieces interlock and fit together because they serve on other committees, the better job we do. And in particular, in this subcommittee, where the vast majority of our work is agencies that are funded by assessment, which is to say that we don't give them direct general fund dollars. They get money from other agencies to do their work. And you'll be learning a lot about that over the next couple of weeks, for those of you who have not been on Ways and Means before. We are pretty good in this room about starting on time. It's important to us. I want to thank Representative Kampf, who set a great example for all of us by shooting me an email already saying that she was going to be a tad late tomorrow. If you are going to be late or absent, please tell us a couple of days in advance, if at all possible, by emailing both Co-Chair Smith and Mr. Borden and me so that we know what to expect. This is particularly important when we have work sessions, right? There's two kinds of things, as you all know. We have informational hearings when we just get a lot of information. We don't actually need a quorum for that. But when we have work session, we need two of us on this side of the dais and three of you on that side in order to be able to do any work at all. So please let us know, and we will be letting you know ahead of time, obviously, what our schedule is. There may be changes. We have our first work session tomorrow. So rock and roll, folks. We've been getting off to a breakneck speed. As you'll notice, I tend to err on the formal side. People are more than well. I like people to call me Elizabeth outside of this room, but in this room, you'll only hear me refer to people by their last names. You have a choice about what you do, but I think it adds to the professionalism of what we do, and I like it. So you choose, but you'll never hear me talk to anybody except by their last name in this room. We believe, Representative Smith and I, that we have the best, we do our best work when we have full and thoughtful conversations. That being said, we have a packed schedule, as most of the subcommittees do. So if we feel like we're getting too far afield, we may ask you to take some of your questions offline or send an email to presenters. When we have questions that people can't answer, they usually will email them back to us. They'll tell us we'll get that back to you in 24 to 48 hours. They send them back to LFO and to the co-chairs. They end up in OLIS so that they're available not only for members of the subcommittee, but for members of the public who may have heard the question asked online if they were watching but didn't get a chance to hear the answer.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
For the benefit of our new colleagues and for
please.
Anybody that's listening, perhaps you would describe OLIS.
Oh, thank you very much. So many thanks to the fabulous IT department that's part of the legislative branch. 2 years ago in the 2013 legislation, we had the debut of something called the Oregon Legislative Information Session, or OLIS, which is publicly available. There are parts of it that are just for members, but almost all of it is publicly available. It's just olis.ledge.state.or.us, or just go to oregon.gov and click on the links there. It is fabulous because it will tell you everything that's going on, every bill that's been submitted, every meeting that's being held and its agenda. You can look ahead a couple of days. You can look back to previous sessions, I think all the way back to 2009 is my recollection, all the bills and what's happened to them. You can track measures. You can see all the meeting materials, so any testimony that's been submitted. And I strongly encourage not only members of the committee but members of the public to use this frequently, because the more we review the information that's available to us, the better informed we are and the better we do our job. So in absentia, thanks Senator Johnson for reminding me of that. the segue from that is we do our best work when committee members are well prepared. Many of you are very experienced with this, and I have every expectation that Representative Hurd and Representative Taylor will continue this tradition. We do our homework. We try to read materials a day or two in advance. If we have questions, we like to reach out to agency heads who are coming to testify before us ahead of time, if at all possible, to say, hey, I'm going to ask you this question, be prepared. Although that being said, sometimes questions come up, and that's why we have the opportunity to ask them. If you know that there's going to be a work session on something and you plan to vote no, please tell us ahead of time. Right? You have every right to vote no on anything you want to vote no on. We need to know ahead of time, because if we're not going to have enough votes to get something out of a subcommittee that we're planning to get out of here, we need to know. And it's totally your right. We just need to know so we can be prepared and plan accordingly. So please, if you think there's something coming up that you have a real concern about, the sooner you talk to Representative Smith or me or Mr. Borden, the smoother it will all be, and the more likely that we'll be able to either address concerns that you have or figure out a way to manage and not put you in an awkward position. So please let us know. And Ms. Jensen, I apologize. I didn't give you a chance to introduce yourself. I completely forgot after Senator Wood said, please be my guest.
I'm Julie Jensen. It's my first session, and I'm happy to be here.
We're glad to have you. Where did you come to us from? You live in Salem? Great. Nice to have you aboard. The other thing about that is that we don't do amendments, brand new amendments, in committee. So at the table amendments, we don't do them here. They don't really happen in the legislature at all in Oregon. You have to work on them with legislative counsel. Any proposed amendments or budget notes. And if you don't know about budget notes yet, please make sure you touch base with Mr. Borden. He can give you a very detailed description. Have to come through the committee administrator and the co-chairs first before you can even really talk about them. We can talk about them as a possibility here, but if you want to have a budget note, they need to come to us first, and ultimately they have to be approved by the big co-chairs, as you'll hear us call them, Senator Devlin and Representative Buckley, because we don't get to make those ultimate decisions. Conceptual amendments really just don't exist. If you have ideas about ways we can make changes, absolutely talk about them, but we need to kind of go through the process always. The other thing to bear in mind is that some of you may remember that in times past, both in this subcommittee and others, we have, because of the way our structure works, we get policy bills into the subcommittee that have not been seen by members of the other chamber. So they'll come to us from the House Policy Committee, and nobody in the Senate has seen them before, or vice versa. When that happens, every now and then it becomes exquisitely clear that despite the fact that one policy committee thinks that it's a fabulous idea, that it's really not going to fly well in the other chamber. And historically, what's then had to happen because of our process is that we've had to do a lot of amending in the subcommittee if we want the bill to have any prayer of going anywhere. That has resulted in a lot of discomfort, understandably, because in theory we don't do policy in Ways and Means. It's all budget. So this year, the presiding officers are going to be trying a new strategy with a small number of bills. When it's pretty clear that that might happen, they will be convening ad hoc special committees with the policy chairs from both sides of the building. Hopefully, I've asked, and I think Representative Smith, you've asked this as well, the co-chairs of the subcommittee that the bill will go to, and other appropriate people to have a conversation about it, get all the amendments sorted out, and then have them come to Ways and Means. That doesn't mean we can't do small amendments in here, but big, major stuff really shouldn't be happening in the Ways and Means subcommittees. How am I doing? If there is information that you need that you're not finding easily, Mr. Borden's your first place to go. He is very knowledgeable and very experienced and can find almost anything. If you have not already met with him to do a whole big budget 101, I would encourage you to make the time to do that, because I still have and refer to the notes that from my budget 101 session that he gave me 2 years ago, and I think they're incredibly helpful. And our budgets are interesting and complex and take some figuring out. What else? Oh, the other thing that you'll know, and those of us who've been here a while know this, Mr. Borden is our scheduler, which means he's the lead LFO analyst for this subcommittee. However, we will have in front of us agencies who have other analysts. You'll see Mr. Siebert, who manages the DAS budget, Mr. Bender, who's got the Secretary of State's office, Ms. McDowell, who's got the Construction Contractors Board, and many more that I forget at the moment, but you'll see them as we go along. So if you have a question and Mr. Borden isn't the right person, he'll make sure you get connected with the right person. And we want to make sure that you do have the right connections, because if you have a question about a specific agency's budget, you'll want to be working with the right analyst. That's very important, because as knowledgeable as Mr. Borden is, he doesn't know every agency's budget inside out, upside down, and backwards. If there's something, we clearly have some new expertise on the committee, which makes me very happy. So if there's something in particular that interests you or you want to have pay special attention to, please don't hesitate to let us know, and we're happy to do that. We have been given budget targets. Our agencies don't have to do, we don't have to do huge amounts of work, because as I said, most of them come from assessment, but we still have to do a fair amount of work. So that's something that Representative Smith and I will be working on hard with Mr. Borden and the other analysts and the big co-chairs. We will also be working very closely, because of the work that we do, with the chairs of the new Information Technology Subcommittee, and which Representative Nathanson sits on, I believe. Am I correct?
IT Subcommittee? Yes.
And with the Revenue Committees on both sides, Representatives Barnhart and Senator Haas are the chairs of those committees, and obviously sometimes policy committee chairs. Our goal really is to break down the silos between agencies and facilitate information transfer, collaboration, and close work, because we want to reduce duplication of services, we want to improve efficiency, we want to reduce unnecessary expenditures. Our goal, and the reason I like being a budget geek, is to spend our and our constituents' taxpayer dollars very, very wisely. And so the more we are thoughtful and engaged, the better off we do doing that. And we are going to be asking agencies to tell the subcommittee about connections they have with other agencies. Obviously, when we see the Department of Administrative Services, we're not going to ask them to list all the agencies that they're connected with, because it's all of them. Every single agency and commission has some connection to the Department of Administrative Services, but some of them may have more specific ones. We like to focus on how they're serving their constituents, their customers, who are their customers. We like to know what they've done with programs that they asked us for permission to do 2 years ago, and so we'll be getting a lot of updates on those and how they tie into new asks that they have for us. We're very interested, especially in this committee, with how agencies serve small business, because the Secretary of State's office has the Corporations Division. We funded the new Office of Small Business Assistance there this past biennium, and that's been going, I think, gangbusters. And I know they're coming back to us to help grow that office, which pleases me, because cutting red tape for small business is a high priority. We'll see a lot of other people through here. And I think, and last but not least, when I came in, poor Representative Nathanson has heard me say this twice now today since we started on Human Services, which she chairs and I sit on this morning. But I think the most confusing thing about budgets is the other funds column, right? There's federal funds, there's general fund, there's lottery funds, and then there's other. Now, I'm not a big lumper, and it turns out that other includes any of the and more of the following things and more. It includes fees. So, for example, the Construction Contractors Board, almost its entire budget is other because it's paid for by the fees, the licensing fees that the contractors pay. It can include assessments from other agencies. So, for example, the Department of Administrative Services puts assessments on agencies so that they run our central human resources system and our telephone system and the fleet, the motor fleet. And those funds that come in as assessments can be general fund, or they can be federal funds, or they can be lottery funds. It includes, what am I forgetting off the top of my head? There's other things in there for other funds. Have I forgotten stuff? Those are the big ones.
Yeah,
those are the big ones. Assessments, fees, assessments get broken down into lots of different pools. So when you see that big category, don't hesitate to ask where they're coming from. We want to know. And I think that was my enormous list. What have I forgotten? Mr. Borden, Co-Chair Smith?
I think you covered it really well. The only thought I would share is I'd reiterate that we are on a calendar.
Yes.
And we answer to Mr. Borden, to the co-chairs, to Ken Rocco. And so if there's somewhere where we're proceeding too fast, just let us know, and we'll try and slow up a little bit. There will be other times, though, where just simply because of the calendar, we're just going to have to move forward. And so please be patient with us on that. Other than that, I think I'm excited. I think we've got a really talented group of legislators. So,
Senator
Wexler? Yeah, thank you. I would add that it is a biennial budget, and we all get caught up in looking at something that couldn't possibly cost that much, but you always have to divide it by two.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, Representative Smith or Chair Smith, would you discuss the voting procedure here, including, you know, including here and then also substitution?
In terms of substitution?
Both.
I can. I don't know if, Mr. Borden, you want to take that, and then I can add on to that. I do not believe there's going to be any allowance for substitution other than this.
Well, what I had in mind, that you generally when you call for a vote, it is, are there any objections?
Okay.
Oh, right.
As would you like me just walk through that procedure?
I mean, a lot of people don't understand that
got
for
it,
the first two
it.
Or three times.
No. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And the second thing I'm referring to is if we have a tie vote or we don't have enough votes to get out of here to move a bill, then the co-chairs have the ability to vote, come in and sit in a chair and vote to add their vote. And if that makes a tie, then the chamber, the speaker or the Senate president can also add their vote.
Yeah.
That's stated very eloquently.
Yeah, what he said.
So what we'll end up doing in this committee is we'll ask if there's any questions, and then we'll ask for a motion. And at that point in time, we'll recognize the motion. We'll ask if there's any additional questions, and then we'll take a vote. For the most part, it's just been a voice vote. Should we ever need to go beyond that, I guess let us know. I'm in a unique situation. I'd share with my Republican colleagues in that I am a Republican in a democratically controlled House, and my job is to help this process proceed forward. And so there might be some times where I'm going to cast votes that perhaps personally are difficult for me. My job is to keep this process moving forward, and I intend to do that. With that said, the co-chairs have the ability to come down and vote, and as well as the presiding officers of the speaker and the Senate president.
And there's one other thing that can happen, and then I'll get you one sec, Representative Hurd, which brings up every now and then you'll see a situation where somebody will offer a courtesy vote. So if it's a bill that they oppose and they don't think they're likely to vote for on the floor, but they understand is
probably has the votes to get passed, they'll be willing to vote yes, and they'll make it clear that it's not, they're giving a courtesy vote to get it out of subcommittee or to get it out of full Ways and Means. And we're grateful when people are willing to do that. And we understand that it puts them in an awkward position at times, and we appreciate it. And it's not always on party lines.
Right. And please let us know on that.
Yes.
Part of what we need to be able to do is go track down our bosses to bring them in here. So if that ever becomes an issue, please let the coach, right, know
yeah.
about it.
That's true. I would also call your attention to, in OLIS, the meeting materials for today. Mr. Borden has and Ms. Jensen have loaded a whole bunch of really helpful information in there, including you'll see a list of all the subcommittee budget measures and the analysts and their phone numbers there so that you know exactly who to get in touch with. So they're all in there. We have a mixture. All the House budget bills are 5-0 bills. All the Senate bills are 5-5 bills. All the budget bills are in the 5,000s just to keep them apart from policy bills, and that's how it happens every year. But there's a whole bunch of really useful information in there that, for those of you who haven't been on Ways and Means before, will be incredibly valuable. For those of you who haven't been on this particular subcommittee, may be helpful because there may be things specific to this committee, such as budgets you haven't seen before.
You know, maybe one, Madam Co-Chair, one of the things that as a committee we ought to just establish right up front is try to limit the use of acronyms.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Maybe if we all agreed to try and avoid that, it would help all of us through this process.
I think that's an excellent point, and I'm glad you brought that up. Government is an acronym-filled world, and even those of us who've been here a few years sometimes have trouble keeping track of them, let alone our new friends and colleagues, and certainly our constituents and others watching at home, which, thanks to the wonderful new systems, people can watch or go back and look at again. All of these things, I should remind everybody, as I hope you've been reminded in your other committees, everything we do or say in this room when that blue light is on is recorded, both audio and video, for posterity and archived. And so it's really important to remember that our microphones are live at all times. It's not like your floor mic, and they're very sensitive. So be thoughtful about what you say and how you, little things you do in this room. Acronyms, the more we can avoid them, the better. I hope we won't have to resort. Senator Winters, who's one of our esteemed colleagues and very experienced, said that when she was chairing committee, she used to have an acronym jar, and if you used one, you had to put money in it. I don't think we will go quite that far, but if we have to, we will. And we'll be reminding our presenters of that as well. Because when my experience is, when you get hung up on an acronym, you don't know what it is, and you stop listening to the rest of the presentation. And whether that's an agency name or a process or whatever, it doesn't matter. So thank you for the reminder, Co-Chair Smith. Other members who've been around for a while, what else would you add to help all of us work together well as a team? Because we're going to be seeing a lot of each other for the next 5.5 months.
I would just add one thing. I was appointed to full Ways and Means my freshman year, and I was just overwhelmed with the amount of information. Don't hesitate to seek any of us out to ask questions.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming. Sometimes I think you get a little trepidatious, or one gets a little trepidatious about asking questions that you think you ought to know the answer to. Don't hesitate to seek us out.
And it can often take 2 or 3 or 4 times hearing the same thing to really process it. I mean, I feel as if I have an entirely different understanding of this going through, and I still ask Mr. Borden a bunch of questions, and Senator Devlin, and also the other people. So really, we're all eager to help everybody succeed. And sometimes it's the freshest eyes who can give us the most useful perspective. So just because you're new doesn't mean that we don't want to hear from you. Other thoughts from other members? Mr. Borden, what else should we be thinking about?
If I may, co-chair members of the subcommittee, just I'll do a little bit of back cleanup here for a few items just to make sure. So the subcommittee will be in a paperless form with one exception, and that is you'll have daily agendas at your desk when you arrive here. Most of the meeting materials will be posted well in advance of the meeting. Hopefully we're looking for at least 24 hours. So your staff should be monitoring OLIS for information that's available. And specifically for tomorrow's work session, the agenda and the LFO recommendation and the semi-independent report are out there for you to peruse in advance of tomorrow's work session. We'll follow the standard meeting notices, so 72 hours ahead of the first public hearing on a measure and 48 hours for each subsequent public hearing and work session. Measures can be carried over as long as they're carried over for the same meeting type. That happens not very frequently. Again, daily agendas will be here, and on Fridays, Julie will be sending you what we think the next week will look like. Schedules can be fluid, but she'll send you a one-pager with 4 days of what we believe will be scheduled at that point. As far as budget process, there are the 14 bills in this subcommittee, and there's one nuance that you have in this subcommittee, and that is that you have the legislature's budget, the treasurer's budget, and the secretary of state. So as constitutional separately elected officials, you'll hear those budgets, but the important thing to note is that the chief financial office and the department of administrative services does not make specific recommendations on those budgets, so that responsibility falls to the legislature. The co-chairs have directed that agencies follow standard presentation guidelines for their presentations before your subcommittee, and it will follow a three-phased approach. So for phase one will be just public hearings and public testimony and information gathering, and they will go in this sequence. LFO will provide a brief overview and have a document for the subcommittee. The agency will make a more detailed presentation on its organization, budget, performance measures, organization, and other such items. And then the governor's staff, where appropriate, will come over and from the CFO's office and do a high-level review of the governor's budget. So phase one will take the bulk of your time, and all agencies will participate in that. Phase two will be an invitation-only type public hearing for those agencies with the larger budget issues, more complex budget issues, major decision points that need to be made. And so select agencies will be invited back for that phase two. And then phase three, all agencies will participate in, and that will be generally one-day work sessions where they will come in and their budget bill will be moved out of subcommittee. During these three phases, the subcommittee will also consider or work into the schedule other items such as statutory budget reports. We have at least one for the public employees retirement system. We have budget note reports from the last several sessions that may come in, the 13th session and maybe the 14th session. Federal grant applications, you will receive recommendations from other subcommittees, and then you'll receive the policy or substantive bills on referral to this particular subcommittee. Last session, there were about 25 of those measures that moved through. So just the perspective, you have 14 budget bills that you will work, and then somewhere in the neighborhood of, let's just guess, 25 substantive bills that will work towards the end of session. Right now, we're finalizing the schedule for the phase one presentation hearings. In general, they will flow this way. We'll try to do the assessment agencies first, followed by the Department of Revenue, Public Employees Retirement System. Then we'll do the fee agencies, Board of Accountancy, Construction Contractors and Tax Practitioners, the Advocacy Commission, and then the elected officials' budgets. So that's the general flow of what we're anticipating the phase one to be. When we start thinking about phase three work sessions, if agency budgets are clean and they're ready to go and you're in concurrence and the co-chairs of the Ways and Means Committee are in concurrence, then those can move out at any point. In your packet is also just a brief summary of the general government budget summary by agency. So it shows the budget by agency by fund type with positions and FTE included. As the co-chair noted, per the presentation instructions, agencies will have two working days to follow up with their responses to your questions that they're unable to answer in subcommittee, and those will be posted to OLIS once they come in. Again, public testimony will be on the final day of an agency's phase one hearing. When we get into work session documents will be prepared by LFO and will include recommendations on the agency's key performance measures. Those also will be the work session documents, recommendation memo, KPM recommendations will be posted to OLIS in advance of the subcommittee meeting for you to review. And then based upon the subcommittee's action on those budget bills, an amendment will be developed by staff and a budget report prepared. And then that will move on to the full committee and to the each of the floors. There was a good discussion of budget notes. I would just suggest that LFO would really like to see the budget notes in advance, because sometimes they can be tricky to write as far as timing and exactly what you would like the agency to do. And we're happy to assist with that in any manner that you see fit. The co-chair mentioned about ponies or carriers, and the one exception I would note is that the ponies for the reports and federal grants, those just go to full, and then everything else will go to the full and both chambers. And the only last thing I would add is that there's some good resources out on the Legislative Fiscal Office website. These include publications and budget analyses of like the legislatively adopted budget and other high-level summary information. But there's also some budget briefs. One is forthcoming on position budgeting, and once that comes out, we'll make sure you get a copy of it. But there's an older one out there that is still informative. There's one on limited duration positions, the liquidated and delinquent account, which is of particular import for this committee as we go through. The most current one is out there. And again, one of the more important documents is the detailed analysis of agency budgets. It gives a nice little history of their governance, their revenue sources, and their programmatic structure. So that is a good resource. It's slightly dated because it was based upon the budget that came out of the 13 session, but the e-board and other information will be generally discussed in subcommittee or and other changes, so it's good background. And with that, Co-Chair.
Representative Taylor?
I just had a few questions, just process things. It's along the way, how are we going to be briefed on what's happening with the full ways and means? If you don't serve on the full ways and means, and I'm obviously busy doing other things, and so how will we be briefed on that? Be it written documents, or are we responsible ourselves to be tracking what's going on with the full ways and means?
Up to you.
Okay, just asking. Forecasts. When will we be, or even getting forecasts?
We get forecasts the same time as everybody else. There's one coming later this month, and then the next one will be in May. So we get the forecast the same time as everyone else. Maybe I'm not understanding your question correctly.
No, I was just curious if we were going to be working more closely with... Okay.
No, and we don't get that opportunity.
And budgets that are anywhere within the state's budget that are subject to sweeps. You must know which budgets are subject to sweeps.
Please.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm just asking some questions.
It's good. They're good questions. Sarah Johnson?
Sweeps is a particularly dicey issue.
Let's talk about that, Senator Johnson.
Those decisions are largely made at the big co-chair level are certainly reflective of the economic situation of the state. I think Mr. Borden would bear out the fact that any excess money in agencies is subject to sweeps. As an editorial opinion, I think accounts have been swept that shouldn't have been. I'm going to call out the cultural trust. I still think that the legislature has a moral obligation to repay $2 million, roughly, that we took from the cultural trust. I can tell you, when I wrote my check to the cultural trust, I never anticipated it was going to be a budget balancer. And I think the state would have been ripe for a lawsuit had somebody decided that they wanted to question that on donative intent. But sweeps are... largely occur behind the scenes. I recall one year when the legislature was ostensibly informed by the co-chairs that $83 million worth of sweeps had occurred across multiple agencies. You will not be consulted by practice and tradition, that happens above our pay grade.
And that's true of all five of us who are subcommittee co-chairs. It's above our pay grade.
Well, I'm glad we're, you know, having a lively discussion already. And I was more or less aware of that. I'm trying to identify which budgets, and you're saying that all of them are subject to the sweeps, but that's not quite right. I mean, there are some that are more at risk of sweeps than others. Is that a correct statement or not, Mr. Borden?
If you want to handle that, Mr. Borden, my sense is almost everything is potentially subject to a sweep. It just depends on how desperate our situation is, how much money is in budgets, and what we're constitutionally obligated to do.
Well, not trust
constitutionally, accounts. But in general.
Not trust accounts.
Yeah. Oh, not trust accounts. You're right. And not trust accounts.
If I may, just as part of the routine budget process, agencies are asked for their other funds' ending balances.
Yes.
Those are updated frequently.
Okay.
And LFO goes through an routine analysis on those other fund ending balances, and we're in that process right now.
Okay, and then are those presented to us from the agencies?
They are not, but I mean, they're in their budget documents, and they're certainly, you can ask questions about the level of those ending balances. There's generally standards of, you know, prudent person reserves that vary by agency and the type of revenue flows they have, but typically it's 3 months or so. And just to make sure we have some standard terminology, the term reappropriation is now used in lieu of fund sweeps, or you hear them interchanged. So if you hear the term reappropriation, you know what that means.
Just so you know, in the state's Secretary of State's Audits Division, we also use the term reappropriate. I just was using a different term here amongst us.
Co-Chair Smith had a comment.
I apologize, yes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I would share a counter thought to this, and there might be opportunities for us to take a look at agency budgets and determine, is the amount of cash on hand appropriate, and does it make sense to readjust the fee income that they are receiving? And so you got the sweeping, but you also have an opportunity to take a look at, are they over collecting? Yeah. And so I think that's part of the conversation that will occur as well.
I'd like to add to that.
I'm not sure that will occur, but it is something that could occur.
And I just want to add one other thing to that. I have personally some significant concerns about how we use ending fund balances, because there are certain agencies who should be planning ahead for major expenditures, and because we require them to sweep reappropriate. We use those ending fund balances to true up other parts of the budget. I think two things happen. The first is that agencies can scramble at the end of the fiscal year, the biennium, to spend money in ways that may not necessarily be in the best interest of the state. I am not calling out any specific agency, but I think we know that happens. And agencies are not allowed to be thoughtful about the fact that maybe their workload is lower this year for some reason, but they know it's going to go up right after the start of the next biennium, so they're not allowed to save money because they know they're going to have to spend more money. You know, so it's something that I think we have significant concerns about, but it's a long-standing problem. We're not going to fix it overnight. Representative Taylor.
Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Smith, although yes, there may be times when folks could be collecting too much, also it would be nice if we were incentivizing and encouraging good management practices, budget management practices, and not, rewarding folks for doing a good job and also helping them save for expenditures down the road. I was just curious about how within this committee, since we're handling so many of the agency's budgets, about how we're working with that. So, thank you.
Certainly. Senator Whitsitt.
Yes. I would compliment Representative Taylor on her questions, and I would concur that there's a huge disincentive to save money. If you save it, you lose it.
Right.
So
that's
they don't.
Exactly my concern.
And I really strongly believe that just because we've been doing it wrong for the 10 years that I've been here and the 10 years before that doesn't mean we shouldn't fix it. I agree with you.
I actually have an idea I'll talk to you about afterwards, but I have an idea about a pilot program. But and it actually comes from Girl Scouts. You'll discover, for those of you who don't know me well, that I tend to pull in things from all sorts of interesting parts of my life to inform, but I think that's what we all do, and that's why we have a citizen legislature. Other thoughts or questions, things we've forgotten? Representative Nathanson.
Because of the nature of this most recent discussion about encouraging either savings or encouraging innovation, I think it might be useful, and Mr. Borden, if you could ask DAS to talk to us about this. We have heard in the past about something that was I believe I remember hearing about something that was a rather new approach at the enterprise level, and it's regarding innovation. A suggestion that if you could find a way through innovation, whether it's technology, better processes, better practices, to do something better, could there be an incentive, like you could keep half of what you had saved mm-hmm. and use that for another innovation project that was approved by an enterprise-level executive team?
Yep.
And DAS can provide information on how that works.
I laugh, Representative Nathanson, because that's exactly where I was coming from on this. When I was a Girl Scout leader, which I was for 10 years for both of my younger daughters' troops, we were allowed to save funds from year to year if we were planning to do a major trip, for example, but we had to get approval from council. And otherwise, we had to give money to council. So if we could demonstrate that we were planning, then we were allowed to save money over. But if we weren't, then they'd want to know why we weren't spending the money on our troop or on other Girl Scouts. So I do think that some kind of a pilot program might be interesting at some point in that regard. Other thoughts or questions or comments? Co-Chair Smith?
No, but I would point out that my daughter has gotten 7 straight questions correct in the geography bee at Heppner Elementary School.
Woohoo! Excellent. Good for her.
But she did not know where Cape Canaveral is.
Mm.
I would add.
That's unfortunate.
It is.
It's very unfortunate. Mr. Borden? Anybody else? I really look forward to working with all of you this year. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have times we want to tear our hair out, but we'll do it together. And let us know how we can be helpful to you. I think we're there. And let us know how we can be helpful to you.